We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples' spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Hello, welcome to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. As always, I am your host and the suppository of all wisdom, Matt Harvey. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. This episode is certified fresh by the critics over at Bullshit Tomato. And, of course, all thanks to you, the loyal listeners, for doing such a thing, for making that possible, for supporting us, for voting for us, and for making us certified fresh bullshit. If you'd also like to support the Bullshit Arts, you can do that over at patreon.com/MattHarveyStuff. But, as always, I cannot expect you to do it alone. No, nor would I. The truth is, none of this would be possible without this episode's major sponsor. And today, we are sponsored by, I'm sure you guessed it, Halloween. That's right. It's spooky season now. How could we not be sponsored by Halloween? Yes, that's right, Halloween. The Night of Nights, for anyone who loves cosplay, sugar, or emotionally processing trauma through theme decor. Whether you're a child demanding a confectionery tribute from strangers, or an adult dressing as a sexy version of your regular job, Halloween's got you covered. Well, barely covered for some of us. It's the one night where all social rules are reversed. Don't take candy from strangers? Wrong. Only take candy from strangers. Don't talk to people in masks? Wrong again! Talk to everyone in a mask and actually reward them for that behaviour. If you're feeling really spooky this year, you could try what we call the Trudeau Special. So, dressing as another culture or even blackface costume. Yeah, I know it's often frowned upon now, but it is guaranteed to make people scream. They won't even ask what you're dressed as. They'll just shove candy into your hand and push you away like a cursed artifact, lest they be seen standing next to you. Halloween, because nothing says ancient pagan ritual honouring the dead like a pumpkin spice latte and a toddler in a Spider-Man suit. And of course, Halloween is proudly sponsored by its original version, Samhain. Now available only in folk memory and ironic tattoos. But of course, as much as I appreciate our big sponsors, the truth of the matter is none of this would really be possible without my live shows. So I'd just like to thank those of you who have been coming out to the live shows. If so, feel free to come again. I wouldn't say no to that. And if you would like an opportunity to do so, well, I happen to have a couple lined up. I'll be in Mildura on November 1st as part of the Mildura Fringe Festival, the first ever that they've had. So if you want to support something new, help get them off the ground, then that's the place to do that. Then I'll be sneaking over to Albury on November 21st to do a little show in Albury, not part of any festival, just for funsies. And then over to Canberra on November 22nd to be part of the Canberra Fringe Festival. All of those shows will be my storytelling and stand-up show, I Got Bit by a Monkey Once. And then, brand new show alert, yeah, that's right. I am debuting a brand new show that I am calling Jokes About the Time That I Got Detained in America and Other Stories at the Adelaide Fringe from March 10th till March 15th. So if you want to hear all about the time that I got detained in America and some other stories, then you're going to have to make your way to Adelaide or come over to the Melbourne International Comedy Festival, because I will be performing it there, but I just have not locked in those dates and times yet, but more will be known when I know it. So, until then, my friends, until then, I will be the bearer of weird news. So let's get into the headlines. The NHS has been urged to apologise for publishing guidance extolling the benefits of first cousin marriage despite the increased risk of birth defects. Marrying a first cousin has been legal in the UK since the 1500s, and guidance published by the NHS England's Genomics Education Programme says first cousin marriage is linked to stronger extended family support systems and economic advantages. It goes on to clarify that while you only have one set of grandparents between you, if you're marrying a first cousin, it increases your odds of being born into a monarchy, which, let's be honest, provides significant economic advantages. Queensland's Energy Minister has announced the state's coal-fired power stations will operate until at least 2046. They went on to say this is because theme parks and it being a bit warmer than the rest of the country but not as warm as other parts all year round are the only reason people visit, and they'll be dead in the cold, cold ocean before they give that up. While this sounds like it'll be bad for the environment, secret documents have revealed that this is actually all part of Queensland's bold new plan to save the Great Barrier Reef by expanding the ocean to cover the entire state. Cybercriminals released data from millions of Qantas frequent flyers onto the dark web after demands for ransom were not met. After data was leaked, Qantas assured its passengers, "Hey, your data is still safer than your luggage is if you fly with us." Qantas is apparently considering compensation for impacted passengers, floating the idea of 6 months of no ghost flights and ensuring their baggage arrives without being thrown on the ground. The data was leaked after the government reiterated it will not negotiate with cyber criminals. They reserve that privilege for regular criminals like Rupert Murdoch and lobbying firms. A new study analysing 49 years of data from 20 sites indicated the woody biomass from trees in Queensland's wet tropical rainforests has shifted from being a carbon sink to a carbon source because trees are dying and decaying faster than they can be replaced. Where else but Queensland could we break trees, literally turn them into the opposite of what they're supposed to be? This just goes to show that Queensland is so dedicated to carbon emissions, even their tropical rainforests are emitting carbon instead of absorbing it. And as a major carbon emitter, it'll now qualify for government subsidies, so that's always nice. But we all know Queensland's motto, beautiful one day, belching the next. An inquiry is examining whether the Parliament should increase its size for the first time since the 1980s, after having already exhausted every other way to make it worse. The idea was very exciting, as a government spokesperson said, increasing the number of MPs means that the ratio of scandals to members actually goes down. The government has also tasked the inquiry with examining whether the parliament should adopt fixed or 4-year terms. This is based on a study that said 3 years just isn't enough to properly disappoint everybody. See, with a fourth year, they really have time to get it wrong for every single member of the electorate. Special Minister of State Don Farrell says a major increase in population over the past 40 years means MPs are now doing more work than ever before, which, if true, means at this rate they might reach a full work week by 2045. The number of weapons bought by ICE in the US has reportedly surged 700% under Donald Trump, and even includes chemical agents and warheads, raising questions like why and who let them? Why? ICE now has more firepower than some small nations. But a nice spokesperson said they'd like to remind you the country that they're going to war with is actually the United States, and this is barely enough weapons to even invade the country that it already occupies. I mean, they'd barely be able to take over Ohio with this small amount of guns. The Trump administration quickly confirmed ICE will now officially handle migrations, customs, and civil wars. ICE officials said they're not stockpiling weapons, they're front-loading patriotism, and reassured the public ICE's new warheads would only be used in extreme cases of visa overstay. Specifically, they need them as there is a giant French lady living on Ellis Island who they believe has been there for 149 years, and that's definitely a visa violation if true. The Carlton AFL club mascot has been fired after walking out of a young fan's bar mitzvah when he discovered that the funds being raised would be used for Israel soldiers who had been injured in the war. And it's weird that they went ahead and sacked a good employee with morals, because the AFL is desperately low on those. For ease of future moral conflicts, sources say the mascot's replacement will actually be a drone just draped in a Carlton Guernsey. Finally, after all these years, I understand why the team is called the Blues, because that's fucking depressing. Protesters will be banned from wearing face masks and chaining or gluing themselves to structures under new laws to be introduced to Victorian Parliament. Officials said this city was built without a town square in order to stop people from protesting, and damn it, we're gonna honour the wishes of those architects or die trying. Government officials assured Nazis that they'd still be able to wear masks as they'd most likely be on the side of the cops anyway. Jacinta Allen has confirmed protests are still legal as long as you don't gather, speak, move, or breathe in groups larger than one. Going on to clarify, the right to protest is sacred, which is why we're placing it safely out of reach. We can't risk anybody breaking it. Masking your face during a protest might become illegal, but hey, masking corruption will still be permitted, and they don't even need to apply for a permit. The proposed laws will prohibit the use of face masks at protests, saying they are being used to conceal identities and shield agitators from crowd control measures such as capsicum spray. The protesters were heard saying, "Yeah, no shit, why else do you think we're wearing them?" The working nickname for the new law is the Supreme Pizza, as it serves as a means of getting the most amount of capsicum into your face possible. Well, that's the end of the headlines for this episode. Let's move on to some of the bigger news now, starting with Blood Money News! You know, I spend a lot of the early part of this podcast promoting upcoming comedy and fringe festivals that I will be performing at in various parts of the world. Speaking of which, come and see me in Mildura, Albury, Canberra, Adelaide, Melbourne, and some other festivals next year. And while I'm not above plugging my own shows in a story about Blood Money, one festival you won't be hearing me announce my appearance at is the Riyadh Comedy Festival, funded by everyone's favourite royal family, the Saudi Royal Family! Incredible. As the checkbooks behind 9/11 attempt to wash their international reputation through a variety of activities, including hosting the World Cup, and most recently hosting their very first comedy festival! You heard that right, Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, or MBS if you're worried that you'll mispronounce or forget it and be called racist or have a body part removed, created an entertainment industry as part of his Vision 2030 plan, the grand project to prepare for the kingdom's post-oil future by buying our sports teams, video games companies, and the morals of comedians. Which, actually, funnily enough, is the cheapest one to purchase out of all of those purchases. This has been adopted alongside advancements for women and youth, making Saudi Arabia a hot commodity in the 21st century. It's not what we call earth-shattering changes, but scientists got very excited when we were able to measure a nanoparticle, and a nanoparticle is larger than the change in rights for women in Saudi Arabia, so it's only fair that we get just as excited for those two. Fair is fair, after all. Still no word, though, on changes for the rights of journalists, but we can't do blanket changes. We can only address one small problem at a time, one infinitesimally small nanoparticle-sized problem at a time. Many comedians, mostly American, of varying levels of fame were invited by the Saudi government to take money from the Saudi government. And according to comedian and people's champion Atsuko Okatsaka, who rejected the generous offer to be censored by the Saudi government, who revealed on Threads a few of the details in the offer that she was presented to appear at the Riyadh Comedy Festival. She noted the accepting of the potential booking came with censorship rules that a lot of you, you can't say anything anymore comedians actually agree to or must have agreed to because you did appear at the festival. Participants couldn't make jokes that degrade, embarrass or ridicule the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, its leadership and public figures, the Saudi royal family and legal system, and any religion or religious figure. Jim Jefferies spoke to podcaster Theo Vaughn before then being disinvited from the festival. The gist of their conversation was that he wasn't too fussed about the killing either way. When describing the murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi by the Saudi government for saying things that they didn't like. I think his exact words were something along the lines of, "Unfortunate, but not a fucking hill that I'm going to die on." Well, no, it wouldn't be, would it? It'd be a Saudi consulate, you fuckhead. What kind of PC gone mad, woke, you can't say anything anymore, Mickey Mouse government is MBS running, where a journalist can't even write an article about you without getting all upset? These days, you can't even describe an extrajudicial murder of a journalist in an embassy as an unfortunate event without being cancelled from receiving a 6 or presumably 7 digit payday. It's crazy. Censorship. The festival dates were from September 26th until October 9th, which did, by some magic coincidence, coincide with the 7th anniversary of the murder of Jamal Khashoggi. And I know that timing is tough when there are festivals all over the world that you need to contest with. So you sometimes get locked into dates that are chronologically convenient for you as an arts-washing nation looking to make your reputation sparkle after the murder of a journalist. The festival was held in the ANB Arena, and while I suspect as much, I was unable to prove that the ANB Arena was in fact built by at least some form of slave labour. Mostly, my horrific Google journey uncovered this little nugget that Deira Square is just a short drive from the ANB Arena and is colloquially known as the Chop Chop Square, as it's the traditional location of public beheadings in Riyadh. So that's fun. And frankly, who could remember such details given how much these comedians are defending their choice to go there? I don't know why other international terrorist regimes don't get in on this arts-washing action. Inspired by this, I am expecting more of these comedians to start popping up in a whole new comedy circuit of varying levels of morality and desperation to attend. I have here a list of upcoming festivals from 2027 onwards that you can expect to see your favourite morally ambiguous comedians doing state-censored jokes about how free speech is better there than in America because nobody tells them to stop making jokes about trans people. So here we go. We've got the Al-Qaeda Comedy Festival, where the jokes aren't the only things that might bomb. Haha! The ISIS Fringe Festival, where outsider artists can put together their most daring works to date. But don't you dare criticize the brave warriors of ISIS. You can go entertain the troops at the Hamas secret base, and I believe it's a hospital, or maybe it's a school, I'm not really sure, but it's somewhere where the IDF has spotted children as part of the Gazan Eid celebration, right? The North Korean Comedy Festival. The good thing about this one is it isn't just the comedians who are killing. Oh yes, we're having a lot of fun, right? The Boko Haram Sketch Fest. I will note, there is one note, No musical comedy acts, please, because the group is so against books that even the Great American Songbook is considered haram. Here's a fun one. The IDF wants you to help them celebrate their 100,000th civilian murder in Gaza alone at the Israel Bomedy Festival. And of course, the CIA regime intervention Christmas party, which will slowly overtake and replace the FBI Christmas party and any other parties that it feels are partying counter to their needs as a party celebrating the Lord. So, some fun locations to look forward to attending parties at. Festivals at, I guess. There has been a lot of online chat about who went to the festival, how much whining they've previously done about either being cancelled or cancel culture in general, and how much they resemble a group who is persecuted in Saudi Arabia on a regular day-to-day basis if they weren't being paid by the government to come there and help them arts-wash the regime. Not to mention the defences they then gave that weren't the classic defence. Oh, well, they gave me a shitload of money and I don't want to work again, so if I get cancelled for this gig, it won't matter. You know, that sort of thing. Defences have covered the gamut of excuses. Whitney Cummings said, I guess I'm this weirdo. I don't operate under, you know, the idea that every government and their people are the same. You think that the people of Saudi Arabia and the Saudi government all share the same values? No, we don't, Whitney. No, we don't. But we understand that you're being paid by the government, not the people, so it makes a significant difference. Pete Davidson, whose father actually died in 9/11, said, they're paying me enough money to look the other way, which is very candid, but still very strange. Chris DiStefano joked that an upside of the kingdom's repression of women is that his fiance can't come with him. Oh, whoops, how irreverent of him. And a bunch of them said that they were doing it because comedy is a great way to get things started, to get things changed, you know, to start introducing change into an area. And they were honoured to be part of that, to be the first steps to changing a country. In fact, the performers have assured fans by taking part that they're actually raising awareness for human rights, mainly for their own human rights. To first-class flights! But I also guarantee you a bunch of people googled why Saudi Arabia bad for the first time because of this. And if these brave comedians have to take a six-figure salary to help people google why Saudi Arabia bad, then they should all be up for next year's Nobel Peace Prize. Honestly. Anything to keep Trump from getting it for another year. So as a comedian, obviously I asked myself the question if I would have it in me to say no to that amount of money. I'd like to think that I would. Of course I'd like to think that. And it is easy to sit here and badmouth them from the moral high ground of being broke and not famous. And then I suddenly remembered the biggest payday that I'd ever been offered. I too was offered the chance to perform for a despotic regime who is out to crush opposition at all costs and has been responsible for multiple human rights violations. Yes, that's right, I was offered to work for McDonald's. I was looking at a $250,000 payday to do an ad for them, not because of who I am, just because that's how much the ad paid. Ads don't pay like that anymore, that's for sure. Now, this might seem like a bit of a no-brainer. Do the ad! There was one condition in the contract. You can't do jokes about McDonald's for 5 years after that ad. And as far as we know, the Saudi government only stopped them from joking about the Saudi government at that show. And seemingly beforehand, as a couple of people did get fired from the gig. So, McDonald's, it would appear, has stricter conditions than the Saudi government on silence. Which is really weird. It's just a strange way to operate in the world. They've yet to straight up murder a journalist, but I don't doubt that Grimace has some skeletons in his closet. They had to shift away from McDonaldland because it's a dark place with corrupt government and police who look the other way to allow Ronald and his questionable friends to bury a few bodies under those fertile soils. And honestly, despite, as far as we know, them not actually having conditions to not joke about the Saudis after the show, everyone is still actually defending going to the show. Like, it makes you wonder why. Like, you would think that they would grab the bag, come back, make a few jokes, boom, boom, done. Not necessarily morally justified, but maybe a better approach than defending the show to begin with. So here's a little, like, inside show business knowledge that, like, it might probably logical, but you might not have thought about it. Just knowing how these festivals usually go, I have to assume that these guys haven't been paid yet, right? It often takes at least a month from the festival dates for the festival to pay. Truthfully, I'm still waiting on money from Edinburgh right now, and that happened in August, and they haven't paid yet. So no doubt they're still waiting for that six or seven figure to clear before they even think about making a joke or two. And that's not to, again, that's not going to excuse it, but I suspect that's part of the reason why people like Aziz Ansari, who, after his last public scandal, went ahead and married a Danish forensic data scientist called Serena Skov Campbell. Because let's be honest, somebody needs to give this man some guidance, right? He is making choices that are at best questionable. And I promise you, his next move was definitely her idea. What did he go and do?
For this Riyadh thing, you know, it was something I really thought about. And even before I went, I said, you know, I'm going to do this, and I hope it's positive. And, you know, if I'm going to do this, I share the concerns that people have brought up, and it's all valid. And I said to myself and to my team, I said, hey, if we do this, part of the fee should go to support causes that support, you know, free press and human rights. And
like which causes specifically are you thinking
I think
of?
I read about Reporters Without Borders, which mm-hmm. I think
that's
is really
a great,
great
organization.
And Human Rights Watch.
But, uh-oh, it turns out Human Rights Watch had some thoughts on the matter of being used as a human shield to cover the comedian's guilty conscience, saying that they cannot accept donations from Aziz Ansari and other comedians who performed at the Riyadh Comedy Festival. In the words of Aziz Ansari himself, oh no! What are we gonna do? Aziz is going to have to do the more traditional means of redemption, a season of Dancing with the Stars! And only after a season of the public being surprised by his surprise ability or inability to dance, but getting up and doing it anyway in a public manner, only then will we allow him to move on from this subject. Though, I guess I am forced to point out that Human Rights Watch's inability to take money from human rights monsters and those who support them does actually mean that technically they can't accept any money from anyone who's ever ridden an Uber or eaten at McDonald's. I don't write the rules, guys, I just abide by them. But after Human Rights Watch declined the Saudi blood money, Netflix jumped in to offer themselves as a moral laundromat instead, offering up a stint on their new reality show, So You Think You Can Take Blood Money, where we offer increasingly higher and higher amounts of money from increasingly horribler and horribler regimes to do increasingly terrible things. And the last one standing gets the Netflix special. And even though Human Rights Watch did turn down the donations, they did offer up a suggestion that the comedians maybe should try possibly performing at a slightly less murdery venue in the future. Moving on now, it is climate news! Climate change. The ghost of burning future to humanity's Ebenezer Scrooge. In that we're aware of the problem, we actively work to make it worse, complain when someone suggests that we change, and then eventually the Muppets will do the best representation of it on screen. Current climate Ebenezer Scrooge and Minister for the Environment and Water of Australia, Murray Watt said a climate trigger that could be used to block coal and gas projects has been formally excluded from the government's overhaul of Australia's environment laws. Yeah, apparently things are just fine. The only real climate trigger will be when Brisbane is lost to the ocean, at which point we will introduce a plan to then phase coal and oil out over the following 50 years, presumably with the intention of taking care of Adelaide as well, just, you know, to cover our bases. Bands rarely tour there anyway, so the global impact of losing Adelaide won't really be noticed. But if we were to lose a city like Sydney or Melbourne, then the rest of the world might start paying attention to us. Instead, proponents of major projects will be required to disclose their expected emissions and provide a plan for how they intend to reduce them. The government will force major projects to report their carbon emissions for the first time, as well as provide plans for how they intend to reduce those emissions to net zero by 2050. Because if there's one industry that can be trusted to do what's right, it's the fossil fuel industry. I mean, honestly, look at how much money they make, and by equal measure, how much tax they pay. They've really proven themselves trustworthy figures whose numbers have never been tampered with by any means of creative accounting. Just good old Aussies digging up big holes in the middle of sacred indigenous sites. You know, Australian things. The decision to not write a trigger into the laws that could block projects that would worsen carbon emissions will anger the Greens and likely cut off that pathway for the government to pass its long-awaited rewrite of the Environment Protection and Biodiversity Conservation Act to streamline approval process for future extinction-level events. Labor defended the decision by saying, "We can't include a trigger because then it might actually risk triggering climate action." And that's more of a Greens thing. Like, we can't risk people thinking that we are working in collaboration with the Greens. We'll lose the stubborn voters who are dragging our party back, and we won't even gain Greens voters because they'll just continue voting for the Greens anyway, so what have we got to gain out of this? While the country's biggest polluters are already required to report emissions under a safeguard mechanism, a swath of industrial projects are not captured by that scheme. The minister said the new scheme would be in line with the safeguard mechanism, which requires major emitters to cut their emissions by 5% a year and reach net zero emissions by 2050. And given that we are currently, I don't know if you've checked your calendars, but we are currently in 2025, that's 5% per year will see us hit 100% by 2045. Not bad, hey? It's not like 2024 was the hottest year on record, with each of the last 10 years also being the hottest 10 years on record, accelerating the global water cycle and amplifying climate extremes, which are contributing to more ferocious floods, including in Queensland, and devastating droughts. No, that certainly isn't happening. Which is why a Labor spokesperson was overheard saying a climate trigger was completely unnecessary, as we're already way past the point of needing one, and it was time for Australia to fully embrace the Mad Max lifestyle, or if we get drowned enough, the Water World lifestyle. And they also called Shotgun on the truck that had the guitar flaming for Rob, because that looks like a lot of fun. Shadow Environment Minister Angie Bell said the Coalition has yet to see their full draft bill, but welcomed the government's decision to rule out a climate trigger after sustained pressure. You know, we are heading in the wrong direction environmentally when the Coalition is enthusiastically on board with your decisions. But both parties were in agreement on a few things. A climate trigger really sounded like a thing that people would get behind, and if they were honest, young people keep voting for the Greens, so fuck them, right? We don't want to support that. and a climate trigger blocking coal and oil projects would send the wrong message to the fossil fuel lobby about who's really in charge of the country. Separately, Senator Watt has also confirmed that companies who breach the new environment laws could be stripped of the profits they made from that breach, with penalties of up to $1.6 million on individuals and $825 million on businesses would be imposed for the most significant breaches. But good news, guys, good news! Companies who breach the new environment laws might have to give up their profits. Which is great, right? Isn't that great? Isn't that what you've wanted this whole time? Because nothing says justice like letting a company destroy an ecosystem and then just Venmo you back a portion of that cash after the penguins have died. Mate, Murray, what are you doing? If you've got to threaten companies with losing profits just to get them to follow the law, maybe, just maybe, and I'm gonna go out on a limb here, maybe they can't be trusted in the first place. It's like creating a rule against murder that only applies if the victim regenerates from being murdered. Then chiding them, now don't do it again. And this definitely isn't incentivizing companies who are already notorious for hiding profits into burrowing their profits deeper than a tech CEO in the climate crisis. Though an ever-increasing labyrinth of shell companies so convoluted that even Theseus didn't have enough string to reach the center of that maze, and if you ever did, not only would you find a mountain of hidden unpaid taxes, but there would also be a Minotaur and the Goblin King living in a sort of messy situationship in the only place that they felt safe from the prying eyes of the paparazzi. And now they will have to kill you so that they can get back to their life of peace. I'm sorry. The government is still seeking broad support for its reforms and has continued to meet with the Greens despite the impasse over a climate trigger. But the Greens were stuck on this, like, one little thing, just a tiny thing, just you wouldn't even notice it. That being the willingness of the major parties to bet the entire nation on Australian values, like, she'll be right and no worries. Though, honestly, what it all boils down to is those really old-school Aussie values. You know, introducing a climate trigger, we can't risk needing to upgrade our national motto, man. We'd have to go from no worries to some worries. And we just can't have that as a country. Moving on now, it is social media ban news. The social media ban is looming with about a month and a bit until Australia officially start kicking children under 16 off social media, who are even being expected to detect and deactivate or remove accounts from existing underage users via means of verification in one form or another. But do they really need to verify the age of every user? It'll be painfully obvious for some users that they are overage. They can look at things like how long they've had an account, the amount of Minions memes that they've posted, if they've ever posted one of those "I hereby declare Facebook can't use my photos" posts, and maybe the most telling sign that they are over 16 is if they're actually still on Facebook or Twitter. Unless, of course, these kids are willing to go to extreme measures like, I don't know, for example, just as a hypothetical, pointing the camera at video game characters, pulling silly facial expressions, or wearing a $22 old man mask, a Guy Fawkes mask, or other cheap party costumes like a funny mustache or a big fat nose and glasses. This, it seems, is a clear indication that the social media ban has been a conspiracy put together by lobbyists, not only from Big VPN, but also from Big Groucho Nose and Glasses. They haven't been this relevant for years, guys. Like, they've just been slowly falling out of relevancy, as the only time of year that they really get seen is Halloween, and that's only if you're lucky. Like, only some people will invest in them. But now, we might need them all year round. Australia was the first country to introduce restrictions on people under 16 having a social media account. New Zealand may soon follow, and Denmark's Prime Minister recently declared that her country would ban social media for under 15s, accusing mobile phones and social networks of stealing our children's childhood. And considering joining the international trend, like someone on the outside of a conga line just waiting for the right moment to sidle on in and join and not trip while doing the first kick, our countries like the United Kingdom, France, Norway, Pakistan, and the United States, who are considering implementing similar restrictions, often requiring parental consent or digital ID verification. But the most concerning ally that we have in all of this is Piers Morgan, who has said, Australia has it right about social media ban. Morgan, of course, notoriously good at finding the right side of history and ensuring that he is firmly on the opposite side of it, partly out of philosophical consistency, partly out of a desire to rake up endless capital, but mostly out of a desire to fill the gaping hole in his heart that was put there by his dad, who wouldn't hug him, and his mother throwing away his best drawings from the fridge. And then he went on a relentless campaign to destroy his immortal enemy, human joy and empathy. The bill's objective is to protect children and young people from the harmful impacts of social media, which is consistent with Australia's obligations under the Convention of Rights of the Child. Failing, as always, to then follow this to its logical conclusion, driving them all to LinkedIn as the only platform. A platform that self-proclaimed itself boring after it escaped the social media ban initially. But it's not that they are boring, not at all. It's just that nobody on there is actually communicating. They're just sharing photos of quarterly earnings and that the latest company pizza party went swimmingly. Nobody communicates like this. This isn't actual communication. It's just jargon. Jargon is, if anything, the opposite of communication. The children will be safe there. They will start assimilating with office culture in a way that will mean that they will stop attempting to save the planet and worry about next quarter's earnings. However, the bill is so focused on this save the children justification, it fails to acknowledge that social media also provides some young people benefits, such as inclusion, social connection, and belonging that are protective of their mental health. Sure, the trade-off is that half the reason that they need the help in the first place is because of the same social media, but the other half isn't. So we are halfway there, I suppose. If only there was some way of fixing the damage that people did to each other in person, we might make some real progress as a species. But unfortunately, that's impossible. Given how unreliable these age verification technologies are, and relying on companies with a history of abusing people's right to privacy as a testing ground for the next lot of tech that they want to develop, it does seem to spell inevitable privacy violation disaster. But as Australians, we are getting increasingly used to having our data stolen and shared on the dark web through no fault of our own. As the anthem says, with gold and soil and wealth for toil, our land is girt by stolen data. If you don't recall that version of this song, it's because it's actually from the unsung second verse, which was arguably at the time just a bunch of nonsense, which is why we don't use it, but it's now surprisingly prescient. And we're getting a nice second use of girt in the lexicon, which is a bonus. Amnesty International has put forward a list of suggestions that government will promptly ignore on how to best protect human rights, including work with young people to implement the ban, ensure age verification measures do not violate rights to privacy. They're not going to like the sound of that. Legislate a duty of care requiring social media platforms to protect people from harm. Oi, sounds like a lot of work. Protect the rights of children and everyone's right to privacy with a Human Rights Act. Oof. Hey, I don't know who you think these people are, but they're not really going to go for that sort of thing. But hey, it's nice. It's nice to have ideas. And to be fair, we do have a few, we'll call them wild card suggestions. They're more like bargaining chips that we can like throw away when they inevitably say that we're asking for too much. So these include kicking all adults off social media and only allowing children on there, as you're wasting way too much of your time on there anyway. Just take that time back and find new and exciting ways to waste your day. Promising to limit coups to light protests, right? So if we get on social media and we get inspired to do a coup, no, we'll just limit to a light protest. Nailed it. Or simply just burn down all social media sites and return to carrier pigeons. This will teach children a number of useful skills, how to look after an animal, handwriting. It will sort of help them minimize communication because I'll have to write on a piece of paper that's small enough to put around a pigeon's leg. They'll teach them empathy because they'll need to learn how to look after animals. Like, if anything, this feels like the way forward. This is a better future for everyone. I think this is the future that liberals want. A ban that furthers isolation and obliterates connections and community will not meet the government's objectives of improving young people's lives. But boy, won't those stats look good on a spreadsheet. Hey, last year we had 2% of children committing suicide, and now that's down to 1.8%. And that's something that we can call verifiable progress. And it looks real good on a chart. Show them the chart. Show them the chart. Removing access to platforms that enable social connections for young people does not address the core issue that social media companies profit from harmful content, addictive algorithms, and surveillance. But it sure does stop the youth from talking about the government of the day and then mobilizing on social media, and in the end, what's more important, right? Ensuring that kids can give each other comfort and community, or ensuring that kids can't give each other ideas about how the government should be better. Look, if anything, just between us, telling these kids that the government is doing a bad job and that life could be better, if only the government stopped approving coal and oil projects, which would mean that the world would stop burning them alive, that sort of talk, that's just making them sad. Why do you want to make the children sad by telling them that they don't really have a future? Somebody please think of the children. While the Australian government moves to introduce this social media ban for all young people under the age of 16, under the guise of protecting them, children as young as 10 are being incarcerated without conviction. This age is currently set at 10 years old across all states except for the ACT, where they passed legislation in November 2023 to raise the age to 14 on the 1st of July 2024, with a transition period raising the age to 12 until then. In Victoria, where the age is currently set at 12 years. I mean, 12 is a much more reasonable age to possibly face life in prison as a consequence for a mistake that you've made. Let's think about what's happening at 12. You've already hit double digits, so like the end has already begun. You've been in school for a little while, so you've had long enough to realize that school isn't really your thing, and high school would just be a waste of taxpayers' money. Best, get yourself to the nearest jail and learn a trade, like shanking or something useful like that. The government says it's banning social media to protect children, which is interesting because apparently prison is fine, as long as they don't have access to Wi-Fi, I guess. Somebody please think of the children! It's such a useful cover for basically doing whatever you like. Because it reads more like, hey, we care about the kids' mental health. But this is coming from the country that locks up 10-year-olds like they're the youth wing of the Taliban, which makes the government's logic on this, I don't know, fascinating at the very least. Social media, too dangerous for developing minds, okay? Well, prison, ideal environment for character development. Like, which one is it, guys? Which one do you think is best? Though I suppose I can see how the government's doing this to protect the innocence of children. See, if you think about it, they're locking them up before the world of social media can corrupt them. Yeah, so what are they, 10, 12? You know, they can't even start a social media account at that age. They have to wait until they're 16. So we're just going to lock them away before their brains can become corrupted by the algorithm. By the time they get out of prison, they'll have missed all of those years that they would have instead spent trawling through social media boards and getting exposed to new ideas, both good and bad, and radicalizing for either, I don't know, protests or unibombing. But I suppose we need to answer one fundamental question. Are children monsters, or are they victims? Which one is it? Can't be both. Everywhere, for the ACT, we are saying that children who commit crimes are criminal masterminds who knew exactly what they were doing. Queensland is even pushing the adult crime, adult time movement, insisting that these kids who still have baby teeth, guys, baby teeth, that they are ready for that Oz lifestyle. And I will give them this one thing. I suppose baby teeth in prison are an advantage. If someone knocks out your teeth, you'll get a new set. They just grow right. It might take a little while, but they will grow back eventually. And if you lose a bunch of baby teeth, you can like spend some time sharpening them into some sort of shank necklace that you can wear like around you for protection. You don't get that sort of protection from social media. Because if they're monsters who deserve jail time, like you say they are, then social media isn't going to do them any worse than going to prison, right? At least they can turn social media off. Prison is a 24 hours a day experience. It's a beautiful symmetry, really. We're protecting kids from digital cages by putting them in real ones. So which social media sites are corrupting our children? So at this point, the law only allows the ban to target platforms whose sole or significant purpose is social interaction. Six platforms are confirmed to be included in the ban: Snapchat, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, Twitter, and YouTube, which we would call the usual suspects of social media, really. I mean, looking at this list, I'd say it's just going to be a field day for Blue Sky, Telegram, or Truth Social, depending on which end of the political spectrum you sit on. But the vagueness of the new laws is what has people up in arms, as we don't know exactly what websites will be caught up in the ban, with concern that websites from Wikipedia to video games like Roblox and Lego Play, Stream and Twitch, all the way to the weirdest of them all, dating apps. Yeah. Turns out that this might include Match Group, which is the company behind Tinder, Hinge, Match.com, Meetic, which is a dating app specifically for Europe, OkCupid, Plenty of Fish, Our Time, which is a dating app for men and women over 50, Upward, which is a Christian dating app for Gen Z and Millennials, and this might be fun to note, they do not own Grindr. They do not own a site called Field, which is a dating app for threesomes, nor do they own Clown Dating. Yeah, that's right, you heard me right. Clown Dating, the dating app for clowns, because they're fucking cowards. Get your shit together, Match Group. It's either all of them or none of them. Even though these apps actually require people to already be aged 18 years or over anyway. Weirdly, it was expected that these age checks would be brought in anyway, but they'd be brought in through other industry codes, you know, the ones that would stop people from accessing porn, those ones, which do come into effect later this year, by the way, heads up on that one, get your cranks in while you can. Nobody thought that this would happen because of the social media ban. It was just a really unexpected side effect. Even GitHub potentially comes under this ban because the government is unsure if it's a risk, which is a great way to run a government. Maybe. We'll vibe it out. It's a vibes-based. It's a vibes-based law. So the eSafety Commissioner has sent a letter to GitHub asking them to consider whether it should be treated like a social media platform that endangers children. Yeah, you heard that right. It's a weird question at best, and a potential lawsuit and jail time at worst. Who's gonna say yes to that? Oh yeah, we're one of those ones that hurt children. Mm-hmm, that's us. Why would anybody say yes to that? But I think the weirdest revelation has been that 4chan is unlikely to be included in the social media ban. I'm just gonna let that sit there for a second so you can absorb the reality of that. 4chan. Breathe it in. 4chan. Now, if you don't know, 4chan has been labeled one of the darker places of the internet. It's the origin place of incels. It was one of the first sites to get the infamous fappening nude leaks. It was the home of Gamergate, which is an online harassment campaign targeting women in the gaming industry, and led to the rise of the alt-right, more specifically QAnon. Imagine if police asked you whether the rules should apply to you or not, and then went, well, you let us know if you think you're a danger to children. However, you, John Wayne Gacy, you're good. We don't need to worry about you. You're just a clown. What's going on, government? Get your shit together. You're banning TikTok, but you're leaving 4chan open. That's like confiscating juice boxes while leaving vodka in the kids' lunch boxes. Granted, 4chan isn't what it used to be, but 4chan is where the internet used to go to ferment. It's the sourdough starter of fascism. So they're banning the apps that make kids sad, but keeping the ones that turn them into fascists open for everybody. Yep, makes sense. Apparently the social media ban doesn't apply to 4chan because it's not technically a social media site, it's more of an anti-social media site. And that's the end of the episode, guys. Thank you so much for hanging around. I hope you enjoyed that one. I know some of it was a little bit bleak, but I do hope you enjoyed it. And thanks for sticking around to the end, whether you did so purposely or you fell asleep in front of your computer. Either way, those views count. We appreciate that. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you would be willing to share this with a friend if you did enjoy it. And if you think you would want to support us in any capacity, you can even join the Patreon. That's patreon.com/MattHarveyStuff. Or come out to one of my live shows. I am doing live shows all across the country this year. So please consider coming out to one of those. Thank you so much. I appreciate you guys being here. And for those of you who are curious, our bonus story is a pretty fun one. It's all about freedom of information laws. So if you want to hear our freedom of information laws story, do sign up to the Patreon. Thank you so much, guys. See you next time. Bye. Thank you.